Hello, everyone. Welcome. This is Julie Knudsen with the podcast Training the Pointing Labrador, episode number 101. I hope anyone listening to this in a current time is sitting at home healthy or getting healthy, and that there's not too much to worry about. Really trying times, and so I'm trying to get out a few more of these podcasts for those people that, you know, are just passing the time and trying to maybe listen to some dog stuff. So if I can help in any way, I'd be glad to. My episode today is going to be a two-parter, one discussing dog mental states and then addressing a few listener questions that I've had that also tie into that real specifically, or maybe I'll just kind of bring them all in one together. But one of the things that is important in dog training that I've never seen it even talked about. I've never read anything about it. And I hope that, you know, as people get better and better and more informed on working with dogs and stuff, and now I'm talking about in the retriever world, there's probably some other areas where they get this stuff down really well. But in our world, we kind of, you know, just get them and go out and do our stuff and hope that they're real good. And it is very, very useful for anybody that owns or trains a dog, particularly when you're starting from the beginning, to make sure that you understand really the nature of the dog you have. And the best analogy that I can make for this is for those of you that have kids, or were kids, it's important to understand that even though dogs are not people and they are not directly like people, they are still living critters, intelligent ones with which we interact, you know, frequently and work with. And I make my job, you know, I make my living out of working with them. They, like us, have mental and emotional ways about them. We all do that. I'm not going to put a judgment on this. It's like, if you're like me, then you're really good. And if you're crazy like her, then you're not very good. I'm not talking about putting a judgment on this. That really is useless. But it is important to understand, just like if you're married or you have kids or partners or fellow employees or people for whom you work or you work for, the more you understand where they're coming from, the more effective you can be in interacting and dealing with them. And it is immensely true with our dogs. And I see people misinterpret people, breeders, trainers, everybody use the way a dog is either as an excuse or blame or credit or all kinds of things. And it's important that if we could just distill this down to its absolute, you know, simplest form. These guys, like people, have a certain emotional way that they interact with the world, and they have a certain way in their heads that they process things. Now, I did a whole podcast on, and anybody that's having issues with this, I encourage you to go back and look. I don't remember the number. I could look it up. On talking about how you train the highly motivated or high anxiety dog, and then how you train the opposite of that, the kind of ho-de-do guy that's mildly interested at best. You approach those dogs from 8 weeks, different ways. Exactly like we do children. And, you know, this was really brought home to me by virtue of the people in my family. And now I've trained dogs. I've been doing dog stuff formally since I was 10, started competing when I was 10. And before that, I took the dogs my sister had trained in 4-H and went out and just did all kind of stuff with them. So I've done this for all my life, and because I'm just drawn to it and I really enjoy it and I really connect with the dogs. But even so, it wasn't until I had my kids. And in my family, when I grew up, it was the most... let's just say when I was in school, I could sit down for 6 straight hours and study physics. Just 6 straight hours. Matter of fact, that's the only thing I could do. I could only do one thing, still can. That's why I'm so simple with dogs. I can only do one thing at a time. I do it full out and completely, but I can only do one thing at a time. In my family, most of them were just like that. Then I get out into the world. Now, in college, everybody else was like that. I went to a real serious place. People doing real serious stuff. So everyone was like that. And I thought that's how the world was. And then when I kind of get out, and when I got married and had kids, I was introduced to the world of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, whatever it is, ADHD. I just thought everybody was nuts. That's what I thought. I just thought, what is wrong with these people? They can't pay attention. They can't, you know, so it was a fault in my mind. Oh, golly, that's terrible. Until I've, over time, and especially through my kids, who had to deal, very, very intelligent, you know, both of them engineers, very intelligent people, who had great difficulty sometimes with the weirdest stuff, and I couldn't figure it out. For math, for example. Now they both had every math class there is, but they had trouble with math in like in junior high and some of that. It's like, how can you not get this? You got it before and now you don't. Anyway, I didn't understand and I thought we had behavior problems. And it turns out that the way their minds function and process, and those of you that are familiar with this stuff will understand what I'm saying. I still don't totally get it because I haven't experienced that particular thing, but it really impacts every aspect of their life, every aspect of their life. Now, I don't know about autism. I haven't personally dealt with that, but I know that is another way that brains work that impacts every single bit of their life. And if you understand what you've got, and if they understand, and then their teachers and their family understands, and you learn the how to deal with it and how to, work with it, then you still can get, you know, like I said, my daughter's in grad school. These guys do really, really well. But they had to develop, and I had to develop some understanding for how come you can't just sit down and study for 6 hours? What's the matter with you? Impossible for them. You know, they'd have five things going at once, and I just thought that was terrible how undisciplined you are, and I was wrong. It was the only way that they could take in the information they needed to. Still, I don't totally understand it. But that made me really look at my dog stuff that I do. And then I began to see dogs that exhibited things that looked like my kids. And then many other things. I'm not just going to draw a direct thing right there. But I'd say there's ADHD dogs all over the place. And it's not always the same thing. But it looks like that. And so there's dogs who focusing on a single thing is not a real natural deal. Now, I think that if we were all just, the apocalypse came and everybody was just, and all dogs were wild and we were all wild, I think that nature would probably remove dogs that could not, you know, that were very haphazard and scattered and couldn't, you know, think something through and all that kind of stuff. So I don't think that they created themselves. I think a lot of our breeding programs and, oh, look, and this one has pretty ears, and all the reasons that people reproduce dogs has lent itself to a greater incidence of dogs that have a great deal of difficulty kind of settling down. I know people like to call them, I don't call them that, you know, the high rollers. A high roller is a dog, in my mind, that just really loves what it's doing, really goes, gives it 100%, but has the ability to also think while rolling at a high speed. There are other dogs that everything is, as I said in an earlier podcast, it's a helter-skelter deal, and it's a high-speed helter-skelter. And it can be very difficult for them on so many levels. And it's important for us working with these, one, not to rule a dog out. Well, this is a knucklehead. Nothing's ever going to happen here, necessarily, to rule them out. But it does make us change the way that we approach these things. So there are dogs where attention and ability to remain engaged and to continue to, in a straight line sense, understand and continue to participate in whatever it is you're doing. And then when they do that, because that's such an unnatural state for them, then if you change up one thing or do one thing, oh boy, they just kind of blow up and fly off the handle on stuff. really, really common in dogs. And so people, I hear, you know, when people have those dogs, and then you get real mad and frustrated with them. So you're real high energy, which is the very last thing that you want to do to a hair trigger mental, you know, dog. And it can be frustrating. And I know, because sometimes I get those in for training when I can tell somebody just said, here, I cannot deal with this, and they give it to me. And then after just a few days, it's easy to see, you know, what the problem is. So that's a thing that, to varying degrees, can happen with dogs. And it, you know, I think just like people, everybody, it's a scale. You know, I'm sure I have some attention deficit stuff. I do, in a sense, I can only pay attention to one thing, not two. Cannot do it. So that's probably some kind of weakness, right? So that has to be compensated for. You know, when I was studying physics, okay, now you got to study something else. You can't just do one thing. And then you got to make that phone call and you've got to come back. So because of the extreme simplicity of mind use, you know, that was it could be a handicap for me. Could be a strong place, you know, thing in other areas. And it's the same way with these dogs. We have to find out what it is they're learning and how it is they learn and what their reaction to life and what we're doing is. And then we need to respond to that. On the other end of this, now you got the high roller ADHD guys. So in other words, everything they do is high speed. They may really have a passion for the work that we're doing. And yet they're brain and mentality and even emotions cannot sustain a continued kind of situation. It's just very difficult for them. There's ways that you need to approach dogs like that. Now, well, let's just move down the scale to the other side. You can have a dog that is not high speed, that all whatever processing they have is at a much slower rate. And also probably usually commensurate with that is they are all, their movements and all that is at a slower rate. So that's what everybody calls a dumb dog or a disinterested dog. And it may be that. It may be a dog with just the lowest IQ in the world, which they exist. It may be a dog with a very, very low interest in things that may exist. Or it may be a dog who, because things take quite a bit more time, you know, and it could even be extreme, like on the other side, it could be extreme, where it really does take time. But somewhere in that slow processing, just like with a human kid, there is a desire to work with you and to do the work that you're trying to get them to do. It's really in there. But if they continuously disappoint you and they continuously fail because they can't do things at the rate you want them to do, then the desire goes away and you lose what you could have gotten out of that dog. So that's the other end of this ADHD crazy frenetic thing. Over there, you've got, you know, the dog where everything is really at a much slower pace. So as trainers, when we have our dogs, there's several pieces of this in here. One is you do have an ability to grasp stuff. So, you know, and it's just like with people. Some people can get the most sophisticated concepts super rapidly, and some, it's just going to take a lot of repetition and time, and on the scale, everywhere in between. Okay, so just the raw ability to be able to take in information, understand it, and then act on that, which I guess you could call intelligence, right? Everybody has that. So you misread. I misread. We all misread going, I showed him three times. He doesn't get it. He's a, boy, that's a lame brain kind of, and it may be true and it may not, because you have to take into account when we're evaluating dogs, and this is me and I have to do it every day. All right. So how well this dog can ultimately understand something. I have that. Then I have the speed at which they interact with the information, with me, with their own internal driving things. You know, they got stuff in there telling them to do stuff, and it's got to kind of come through the mechanical works at whatever speed it does that. So we've got the speed that everything happens, the inherent speed with this dog. We can't change that. We can't change their intelligence. their ability to ultimately grasp and understand things. We can't change the speed at which they emotionally and mentally process. It is what it is. And then we have just the desire and the love of what it is we're doing. And that's the one that gets either blown up all out of proportion or just squished and ultimately just starved into non-existence. So you have those three things. So on the low, if you're on the lower end, the slower guy, that takes more time. Okay. You have to, just because it takes more time doesn't mean, this dog has no desire. This dog just cannot do this. You don't know yet until you've taken the time, allowed them to process the way they do, and given them opportunities without being punished because they're not doing it right, to see if the spark grows or the spark shrinks or there's not a spark and never is. So that's sort of how you decide to proceed on that. Let's go to the high end, the ADHD side, which there are far more of, at least in the world that I see, of these guys. And now the upbringing on these guys, both sides, is so important. That's why I emphasize that in so many of my podcasts and what I write and what I say and when I talk to people. And it's so important what the upbringing is. But so you have, let's just take, we're on the other side of this spectrum right now, right? We're on the wild and crazy, high speed. What they do is high speed. They move rapidly. And we're on the high end of this. I mean, it's almost like jerky, fast, just unexpected, just whoo. You know, if you walk over to them and they weren't expecting it, they literally shirk away really fast. Just a really fast physical response, which means that's what's going on inside their head. A really fast mental thing. And it might be fast and just straightforward. And so it's easy to get in there and teach them things because they understand or react very quickly, but they can stay on task. They can stay on the thought. And then there's other dogs that have this high speed processing and all that. But you got the ADHD thing going where it's not goes down just a straight line and stays on task, where it goes from this to that, to this, to that, to this, to that, to this, to that. Okay, those for me are the hardest guys to train, because it's like juggling about six balls in the air at one time. So still with these high-end guys like that, the fast, by fast I mean high-end, I mean just a high speed, I have to find out the same thing I did about the guy on the other side. What is this dog's ultimate ability to grasp the information and ultimately wind up being able to use it and be trained and execute the stuff? I have to find that out. You can't tell that right off. You have to watch between the high-speed reactions and maybe the overreactions and maybe the fear, because now I'm not speaking from experience, but I understand from my kids, when you have the mind that jumps from one thing to another real rapidly, it is extraordinarily frustrating. And so out of that extraordinary frustration can come anger. And anger in a dog, I don't think they get angry, but their frustration level gets where they respond to how frustrated they are. So it would be equivalent to human anger. But it's frustrating, and you can get angry or you can get very defeated because all this stuff is happening and you can't manage it. And so, again, frustration or defeat. And I've done that with dogs. I've worked with them, and I'm just, by gosh, I'm going to make them do this stuff. And I can see when they react with anger. When I'm, getting them to heel or sit or force fetch, I mean, you can tell they're just like, I want out of here. And it isn't because of anything, I'm going, why are you doing this? We're just heeling and sitting. Or maybe ear pinching on the force fetch. Why are you doing this? I'm not being unfair. I don't have high pressure here. But it's because, and I don't understand this, particularly because I'm not that way, that they're just frustrated because they can't stay with this simple thing I'm doing. They just can't. Again, that's hard for somebody like me to understand because that's how I do everything. But But my kid stopped me. No, because it's on this and that and this and that and this. And you know you're not supposed to be doing this. And you just can't do anything about it. And so it's just frustrating and you want to get out. And so that happens. And that you can just think that the dog doesn't want to do this or doesn't understand it when it's that level of frustration. This sounds kind of complicated, maybe. I hope not. I hope I have some clarity here. But guys, this happens all the time with dogs. And a lot of times when people are having issues and problems, it's because this kind of thing is happening and we're not aware of it. And so we tend to just make it worse and worse by doing more and more of what we're doing that's causing the frustration or the lack of understanding on the part of the dog. So anyway, back on the what I was saying. So we have to figure out, you know, what their ability is to grasp stuff. They're going to be a little bit handicapped, even if they have a lot of ability to grasp stuff. We're going to be a little bit handicapped by the sporadic focus and thought. That's going to be a handicap for that doggy. It would be a learning disability. It was a kid. And it's just a thing that you have to contend with as you're teaching them. And if they have the ability to learn this, then they can learn it. But not if we frustrate them and make them angry. And ultimately, that winds up also in just defeat, just giving up and being defeated because it just seems like you're just going out and frustrating them every day and they can't win. They can't learn to manage their situation. So you've got the intelligence part of that. Then we have this speed thing. So this makes it difficult because when we're talking about the speed thing, so their minds process really quickly. Probably their bodies move very quickly too. So when their minds process really quickly, you need to find out whether you got that sporadic focus, the ADHD thing, or whether you just have a really fast processor. You've got to figure that out. And so how you do that, you know, if you had a kid, I'm speaking from experience now. I've been in a conversation with my daughter, who's an awesome human being, and we're talking about something, and then all of a sudden she brings up something. I'm going, where did that come from? And then I get her back over on the thing that we're talking about that interests me, and we're on that, and then it reminds her of something else. And I've learned this now, and so is she. It's just for her, that kind of thing happens. And so you just deal with it and make it, you know, she's learned how to study physics for 6 hours herself. So she's worked that out. But that's a thing that tells you when you're interacting. And so with dogs, when you're working with them and being very simple and very clear and not making it a negative thing, but making it something that's enjoyable and they're doing it, but you can see, you know, that they're with you and then they're not with you and they're with you and then all of a sudden something else. And don't, puppy people, don't use that as an excuse for your dog won't heal and sit under distractions. Okay, that's a little bit of a different thing. I'm just talking, you're somewhere where there's no distractions, and this dog has these auto distractions that you can't see that come from nowhere. That tells you something about what's going on inside their head. So if you have a dog like that, you have to really simplify your training sessions. You have to have them be more broken up. You know, you have to give their mind situation the optimal opportunity. So if their attention is very hard to keep on one thing, then you might do something, let's just say some healing and sitting. And this is going to sound crazy, but I've been doing this for a long time. Just do it 25 yards along the fence or down the road. And stop. Do something else. I don't know. You could throw a bumper. You could just stop and let them sniff and pee and everything. In other words, let the mind just relax again. And then maybe one more time, bring it back in and do something else. You have to train these guys differently than you do ones that fall more in the middle of the normal spectrum. You just have to do that. And if you do and you're patient, then you can make good progress with that. Usually my reaction has been traditionally when they're not paying attention to me is to use some enforcement on training obedience and bring that attention right back. But when you're talking about these guys on the high side of the scale of doggy ADHD, that doesn't work. And so then you have to use really short little pieces of training and make it be, don't drop your standards, okay? Never for any of these guys drop your standards, but just shorten it down and make it real simple, break it up, do some other stuff, come back, do a little bit more, and be careful about being frustrated and resorting to pressure, because that just makes the minds go even more disco ball type stuff. So you've got to be real careful there. Now, the third piece of this, just like it is on the, when I talked about the lower side of the spectrum, is how much of this do they really love? Do they have a great desire? Do they have desire to go, you know, to retrieve and to do the work that you want to do? Because just because they run around crazy does not equate to desire. Do they, when you toss something out, we'll use retrieving for an example, when you toss something out, do they go get it and bring it back? Now, if they just run out there and then run on, I'm not sure that that's much of a desire retrieving. You just gave them an excuse to go run around, which feels really good because the mind can relax. Do they go get it and come back? You know, especially as little puppies, but do they do that? Okay, then we do have that desire for retrieve. It's just really hard to focus on all the stuff that we have. So you can get feelings just by watching and believing what you see. And it's easy to misread. Like I said, I see people throw something out, their dog runs out there, just keeps going. Then may come back, may not. And he's just so much, he loves retrieving. No, I don't see the love of retrieving. I see the love of run, and you just gave him a good excuse for it. So those three things, you know, how much do they truly, genuinely like this stuff? And how much ability to grasp and understand it, given the right opportunities? And then, what is this speed and ability to mentally focus on and understand things? You know, how long will it take for them to understand? So those three components are what you have to put together when you're deciding how to approach this dog and what to do. So I hope this makes sense. If you've only trained one dog and it worked really great and you're going, I don't know what the heck she's talking about, I get that. Good for you. But for somebody like me that's just trained hundreds and hundreds of these guys, with the number of ADHD kind of dogs coming in, really ramping up. And so I know that, you know, when people get what they call a high roller, which is, you know, they always wild and crazy, and they always equate that to he'll go long. I don't know. They'll run. They love to run. That has nothing to do with the long retrieve, because you need to be accurate on a long retrieve. But people seem to think that's a good thing to breed. And when you get, some combinations that aren't real good, that makes that difficult. I also think, before I get over to the questions, one more thing. So we're talking about those three, you know, ADHD kind of stuff all the way down to the other end, where everything is very, very slow. And slow and not focused is, you know, again, you just take the time. And you just have to do a lot of repetition. And also, if focusing is different, you always shorten your training times, always. And use exercise. Let me just say this. For all these guys, one of the best things for any ADHD critter of any kind is focused, structured exercise. Not running behind your truck, not chasing the other dog in the backyard, which gets me to one of my questions here, but right next to you on a long walk or a long run, or even on the bicycle attached, so that they have to focus and not run in front of you, or not trip you, or not turn in front of the bike. They have to focus, but we are taxing them physically and mentally and changing their brain chemistry. Always better, just like it is for humans, it's always better. Not the run crazy deal. That makes it worse, because then we have the chaotic crazy thinking just being reinforced with fun, and it makes it your next training session, even though you go, oh, it's tired, not the mind, it's just all fired up and all the cylinders going every which direction. So the exercise is huge for that. And dogs should be exercised anyway, but when you have some mental or emotional issues, that's probably the number one best thing. Not the drugs. They're all kind of drugs. I was sitting in the vet the other day getting a cat neutered, and I was reading the signs on the wall, and they have all these new calming drugs for the dogs. I thought, I'd like to buy a case of those, but I did not. because I have to deal with what's really there in these dogs. And sometimes it's really difficult and sometimes it's hard to figure. But I'm going to not, instead of just like you do kids, ADHD kids, you know, just tamp them down where they just sit there. That solves all the problems. It doesn't. It just makes it ultimately worse in the long run because you've never given them coping skills to learn how to deal with stuff. So exercise, best thing in the world. There are also, I believe, dogs that fall on the canine autistic spectrum. And I do not understand autism enough to speak very wisely on this. But there are also dogs, and I've talked about it before, who very much stimulus, very much input, can really just makes them so very uncomfortable and makes them kind of just close down or react in odd, unusual ways that don't make sense to you. So there are dogs that have this same stuff. I don't know if it's food related. I'm not sure why that would be. When I was a kid, I never saw dogs like that. But now with breeding things going on so long, there seems to be a number of, I've seen it, dogs that truly, when they just sit there and look at you or they just sit there in the environment, they aren't behaving like most dogs would. They just are different and you can't put your finger on it. And then they react to things differently than most of the other dogs. They, you know, like, for example, in my deal, I had one that I know was autistic. And she, once she found out where her kennel was, because I have, rows of kennels inside, she would go there and just stay there. Gate open or not, if the gate open, she'd just go in there. She just wanted to be there. There was good. Whew, just right there. And if all the, she never wanted to be let out with the other dogs. She wasn't mean at all. She didn't want to be let out with them. She wanted to be left in there until everyone else was out. And then she would go out. And she wanted to be in her own yard. And it was just the oddest thing. And I was so perplexed when that was some years ago with this dog who was, and if she was out, because there I am trying to get her, come on, you got to be out there, buddy, stake out, go do the work. And she would just lay down. And I was very confused. And so after watching the dog and training her and stuff, the only conclusion that I could draw is that basically she's like an autistic person who, when there's just too much stimulus for her, which happened to be noise, lots of action, and lots of other dogs, that was just too much. She just closed up. And so training her had to be a very, very singular thing and a very, very calm, real connected thing where she trusted me. And just never any loud or, I never tapped that dog with a wiffle bat on the bottom. It would have been just too much. So there are dogs that are somewhat, I don't know what it really is, and I'm not saying that's what it is, but it seems very similar to that. So if you have one of those, instead of going, I don't know what's wrong with this weirdo dog, it might be that. And so I feel just like with our kids, if we can understand where they're coming from and what's inside their heads and hearts, it makes it a lot easier to give them the very best life that you can and let them learn all the things that they can learn in a way that they can manage themselves. So that's a big deal. And I've got a few dogs in training right now where I'm really, and that's probably what helped spur this on, is I got to step way outside my just ordinary dog training lines because there's a little more going on there then, you might notice. So those of you that have dogs that seem, extreme or weird or something like that, just something to think about. I've always thought I'd like to write a lot of more stuff on that, at least just to share my experiences, because I think it'll help some dogs out that are maybe misread or misunderstood. So some of the listener questions I have feed perfectly into this, because I've had with several people who have dogs that are, let's just say they're on the high speed end stuff. Let's just say that. Everything is pretty fast. Physically, mentally, it's pretty fast. And one of the questions that several of these people have had, and it's always the ladies, but the guys probably think this, but don't say it. But the ladies, they say it right out. When I say this, okay, when you go home, don't, you know, be careful, do this, do that. And they say, well, how about playing with the neighbor dogs or the dog park? I hate dog parks, right? How about, can we still do this? How about they like to play with the neighbor dogs? And my answer is always no, don't do that. And it's like, well, what's wrong with playing? Everything has to play. Everybody wants to play. And so I'm going to answer, should our dogs play with other dogs? And, okay, based on I'm not all fuddy-duddy, right? I like to play, and I love dogs happy, and I love dogs moving around. Any dog I've ever owned, from my wiener dog to my whatever it is, and every retriever I have, no, I do not have them play. If we're all out in the yard together, they can run around, they can kind of run over here together. There is no playing, running, smacking into stuff. And here's the reason, and I've never done it and I never will. One, dogs get hurt, and I've seen it. So there's no reason that I want that. But because when dogs are doing that, when dogs are playing, they completely disconnect from you. Okay, right there, that's something I can't stand. If I have my dog and they don't even know I exist and we're out somewhere together, this is not good. So that's the first thing that I cannot stand. The second thing is all of their thinking, all of their mentality, all of their psychology, all of their emotion is in this crazy run around with another animal or two or three or four that have the exact same state of mind, which is crazy. And it can go, I don't need to, you know, it could grow into something. Somebody could do something just a little wrong that makes another dog mad, and bad stuff can happen. And it does. But most of all, that mentality, separate from me and go nuts, is not a thing that will ever be useful to me one moment of my life or that dog's life. Ever. There is no upside to that. That is not the way dogs should get exercise. And that is not the kind of mentality that I want them ever to experience. Right? Ever. I don't want them to disconnect from me and run wild. Now, here's my point. So, right, I had kids. And when they were little, we would go to the park or whatever and turn them loose. Go. You go out there, you can play with the kids. Of course, I'm right there and I never let them out of my eyes. But they have to learn to socialize. They have to learn how to interact with other little human beings. They have to learn to share, and they have to learn to wait their turn, and they have to learn to help somebody that gets stuck on something. And they have to learn how you speak and go, you know, they've got to learn that with other people that they don't know. That's a part of life that they have to learn. My dogs never have to learn that. They learn to socialize, you bet. They learn that if there's other dogs around, there's other dogs around. That does not mean pick which one is a target and go slam into him. They are socialized by virtue of, if you come to my house and your dog is there, my dog will not bite your dog, will not jump on him, will not, you know, just that one ain't going to happen. They're very social. You know, I can walk it to a hunt test or a field trial or anything else off leash and the dog is with me. They're going to jump in the back of somebody's truck and they're not going to go, they're going to, you know, because they're very social, but they're doing their thing. When you, and also, if you have a dog that likes to run around and sees another dog and thinks they're a, you know, just a toy, and if that happens to be me and my dog, you really don't want that, because your dog's going to meet the bottom of my foot when it tries to jump on my dog. That is, nobody in the world wants that whatsoever. So the socialization thing is not good. And I'll just say, when I get dogs in for training, and I have a bunch of yards and one large yard, and everyone has to learn to get along, you know, be social, that's fine, but no crazy. And so whenever I get one of these dogs that's been at the dog park or gets to play with other dogs, even their own dogs at home, I put them down and they sit there and they go, look at that little yellow female over there. And to them, it's like it's a bowling pin and they're a bowling ball. And they think it's fine to go just jump on that dog. And then they learn here that they don't do that. But it's like, who thinks this is okay? So your dog is now obnoxious and annoying to have around. And so that's why you don't do the playing thing. And I, for some reason, it tends to be more females. And these guys are not kids. They do not learn to socialize that way. They learn to maul and be crazy and find which one is the weakest one and have them down on their back. None of the stuff that you want. It is not a correlation to putting children playing together. It's a very different thing. So no, that is not something that you really want to do. Given that we're 40 minutes into this, I'm going to have to curtail the other questions for another deal. But I just want to bring this dogs playing together question in with the topic earlier. And that is, let's say you have a dog that is on the ADHD spectrum. And those are the ones people most of all like to turn loose with other dogs. Because then they'll just run around and wear themselves out and they get a break from this stuff. Kind of like putting kids in front of a screen to make them be quiet for 3 hours instead of, you know, doing kid stuff with them. Hey, I understand that. But it's not ultimately not in the best interest of the kids, because then they go into that, you know, REM mind condition, and it does some bad things on little kids. It does really bad things with dogs when you turn them loose and let them run around. So if you have that dog on the side of the ADHD scale, you know, where bing, 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 we focus on 14 things at one time and we do it at high speed, and you let them go out there and really just turn that loose and let it go for an extended period of time, the bing, bing, bing all over the place thinking, so they can go, get that dog, and I'm going to bite his leg, and I'm going to run over here, and I'm going to turn around, and I'm going to run away, and I'm going to come back, and I'm going to slam him down, and you let that be associated with pleasure. And there's, you know, whenever something's associated with pleasure, kind of like Pavlovian dog things, right? Then, oh, it expands and grows a lot, and it becomes really, really hardened into their psyche and their enjoyment. So when you have a dog that's kind of ADHD, the last thing you want to do is really cement that in. Cement that sporadic, wild, chaotic thinking while they're having tremendous fun, almost kind of a like a drug fun, if you've seen them. It's almost like, I mean, I haven't taken drugs, so I don't really know. But it's like you just gave them a bunch of, you know, crack, and then let them do something they love the most. They're going to just kind of go nutso, and it gets basically seared into their thinking and the way they do stuff. And then when you try to work with those guys, it's even worse. It's really hard because you're fighting some wiring that got in there in a way that you really don't want. So just for those of you with a kind of wired up dogs, just at least some food for thought on that stuff. It can be a dangerous thing. It can be a dog when you go out hunting, you know, that just gets something in their mind. And they're used to, if you let them do the play or the dog park thing, they get out there and they're going, there's a bird, I have to get it, you know, and they'll blow right through electric collar, they'll blow through the whistles, not because you didn't train them well, but because that kind of thinking got cemented in with fun and pleasure. You just go, and it can overpower responding to commands. So that's why I am emphatic about never doing that, because it can have some downstream effects that I don't think people realize until it happens, and then they don't know why it's that way. They don't know why, and I'm telling you why, because of all that stuff that was done before. So I hope that makes sense to people. If not, this is just another crazy lady kind of babbling. During the pandemic, we're all holed up in our houses. So once again, I wish the best for everybody. This is a great time to get out and do some stuff with your dogs, and, you know, really take advantage of the time that you have if you do have extra time. And if you don't, you're one of those hardworking frontline people, you know, just God bless you. I will be back with something maybe a little more pleasant next time.